Hi, this is Emmanuel, and I'm in Singapore this week. I'm actually riding in an elevator right now. I'm not doing anything I shouldn't be doing, and I'm about to get out of the elevator, walking down the hallway, about to head outside, take a little walk through the streets, and I guess comment on the passing scene as I actually see what's going on. I'll tell you, when I first thought of coming to Singapore this year, as an extension to my trip to Malaysia, I was a little bit nervous because I'd heard so many things about this place, about how it was a virtual police state of rules and activities that you couldn't do, all sorts of things like not being allowed to chew gum, not being allowed to spit, being caned for various offenses that you might inadvertently commit. And having been to North Korea the same year, I don't know, I just thought maybe it would be a little bit too much. But I have to say, after getting here, I've been somewhat surprised, especially after just being to London a few weeks ago. The contrast is rather astounding. I don't see nearly as many cameras or surveillance or police. Just a lot of people milling about in a city that's very prosperous, it seems. Yes, there are rules. There are lots of rules, in fact. And if you look around, you'll see all sorts of signs telling you things that you shouldn't do and the penalty if you do them, which once you understand it, it's really not so difficult to get along. I mean, there are certain basic things like crossing at the green, not at the red. Okay, right now I'm passing a no smoking sign. Designated smoking corner, actually, so you're allowed to smoke on this corner, but not in other places. Basically, think of this as a really big condominium with all sorts of rules and regulations that the residents have to follow if they want to live here. And that's kind of what we have here in Singapore. Yes, there are excesses. There are canings. There are, I believe, beheadings if you do something like smuggle drugs into the country or out of the country. It's very different from what I thought. It feels like a lot more of a normal place. I was figuring people would be walking in sort of almost robotic steps, following all the different rules. And you have so much diversity here. You have so many people from different walks of life, but they seem to just be getting along together, following the rules. Which, to me, right away, that's a problem. And to many people that I know, that's a problem right away. And that was nothing really horrible. That was just simply a tire exploding. There's a tire shop right next to a bunch of restaurants here. It's kind of unusual to have a tire shop in the middle of all that, but you do get the occasional exploding tire. Right now, I'm standing in front of the Singapore police station, or one of the Singapore police stations. And I'm standing at an intersection where the light is red. Nobody dares cross. I don't want to give the wrong impression. It's not like there are soldiers with guns waiting to shoot you if you cross against the red. It's just like in some American cities, Austin, Seattle, places like that. If you cross against the red, you might get in trouble. Simple as that. I'm not sure what would happen to you if you crossed against the red here. I'm not about to try it. You'd probably get fined. It's just part of that whole maintaining order thing. It does seem to work here. It's not exactly the ideal setting for people like me or people like our listeners, but they have no crime here to speak of. Very little crime. You can leave things on the street and they'll still be there if you come back for them later. But of course there's a trade-off for that, in that you can't have things like an opposition party, for instance. Or you can't really have demonstrations or strikes or things like that. So, is it worth it? I don't know. I'm not going to make that kind of conclusion here. I'm just going to present what I see in front of me. And you can make the decision yourself. I think some people in America already have made that decision and would gladly give up a little bit of freedom for a little bit of order and security. And that seems to be what this place is all about. But they're doing it in a way that's not nearly as over the top as you see in London, where everybody is constantly in a state of perpetual panic and fear. Cameras watching you, every possible motion that you make. walk down the street and you're filmed at 50 different angles. Like I said, there are cameras here, but they're not everywhere. They're not so prevalent that you feel like you're on a TV show all the time. It's just an orderly society. And that's kind of scary in and of itself, I realize. But it's not as scary as I thought it was. And the people seem content in this. They seem rather lively. They don't seem to be cowed or intimidated. They just have different set of priorities. And at this point, just going about their daily business and feeling somewhat safe and secure seems to be what's on most of their minds. And that could change. That could change. There could be opposition at some point, I suppose, that would allow people to perhaps do something so bold as run an opposition candidate, or change the way the government is run, or maybe even chew gum or something. Now, on that subject, actually, the gum is interesting, because when I came here, I figured that was something that I was going to dispel right away, was the myth. What I saw was a myth that you actually couldn't have chewing gum in a country. I mean, it sounds absurd. It sounds ridiculous. But when I went to 7-Eleven, and there are 7-Eleven just about every block here, little tiny 7-Elevens, and I was looking in the candy section for just a small pack of gum, I found all kinds of things that are similar to gum. I found mints, I found chewy candy, but chewing gum, nope, it was not there. It was not there at all. And I asked a few people about this as to where exactly it was, where could I find it. And, well, actually you can find it, but you have to have a prescription. You have to have a prescription for chewing gum here in Singapore. I'm not kidding. And where do you get that prescription? Well, a dentist apparently will give you a prescription for chewing gum, as unusual as that may sound. And of course, there are things like nicotine gum. You can get a prescription for that as well. Now, I went to a pharmacy and I saw the gum behind the counter, and I just asked for it innocently, saying, hey, could I have that? And they gave it to me. And I asked, well, are there any regulations? They said, well, normally we would have to write down your name and get ID to get a pack of chewing gum. But since I have a Western face, they knew that I didn't have a prescription and that I probably just wanted to chew gum like I could back home. So they were nice to me with regards to that. But in actuality, I had to be made aware of the various rules and regulations. Do not... this guy just jaywalked in front of me. I can't believe it. I'm not going to do that. I mean, people do jaywalk. People do break the rules a little bit. But if you're a guest in a country, I feel it's the right thing to do is to obey the rules and just observe them. And challenge the rules back home. But as far as challenging the rules here, that's the responsibility of the people who live here. And if you want to jaywalk, then do what you feel is best. But I'm just going to stand here like a fool, waiting for the red light to turn green, even though there's nobody around. Well, actually, that's not true. There are lots of cars around. But I could easily make it across if I wanted to. So anyway, I bought the chewing gum, and I felt very rebellious as I did this. I had no trouble opening it up in public and actually chewing a piece. Everybody knows the rules. They know the penalties, and they know it's kind of silly, too. They sell shirts that have a list of all the penalties for all the different rule violations. So they're aware that it looks a bit silly, but they're also aware that out of this, they get a society that certainly seems a lot more stable than some of the ones surrounding it, where there is very little crime, you can go out at night, there is nightlife, there are fun things to do. Just a sense of control that I guess can be a bit stultifying at times. I'm trying not to look too conspicuous. I don't think it's a big issue that I'm talking into a microphone, but just in case it is, I'm also holding a cell phone, making it seem like I'm doing some kind of a Skype thing where I'm talking into a nice microphone and listening on a cheap cell phone. Speaking of cheap cell phones, we found some really incredible deals here, not only here, but also in Kuala Lumpur as well, where you can buy a prepaid SIM, insert it into your cell phone, and if you dial the right prefix, for instance, here in Singapore, you would dial 019 and follow that with the country code and city code, rather than say plus the plus symbol and the country code and city code like you normally would. If you dial that way, you can make calls to the United States for about 12 cents a minute, which is incredible. If you were to use your home phone here, your home cell phone, you pay something on the order of 65 cents a minute, including roaming charges and long distance and things like that. The sound quality seems identical to me, so I'm not quite sure how this works. I believe it's a limited capacity network that they're using. So that's how they get rather cheap fares that way. So it's pretty a pretty cool deal, and it's nice to be able to stay in touch with people back home. Singapore is filled with all sorts of different districts. Right now I'm in one of the main shopping districts, where basically there are all sorts of department stores and restaurants and jewelry shops and a lot of tourists wandering around. Not my favorite district, because I see enough of that in all the various cities I visit, but it's indicative of the kind of prosperity they have here. It's basically packed full of shoppers. And I gotta say, it's not one particular group over another. You have Muslims, you have Chinese people, you have Japanese tourists, you have people from Europe and from Africa, Australia, a lot of people from Australia, and even people from the United States. I can pick them out a mile away. Double-decker buses going down the street, kind of similar to London. In fact, there's many things that are similar to London here. This was once a colony of England, and you can see that in the language, in the signs, in the spelling of things that are translated into English. You hear all sorts of different tongues being spoken here. So you have this tremendous mixture of cultures. And in all the time I've been here, everyone seems to get along quite well. So that's always a good thing to see. If you didn't know about all the rules, if you didn't know about all the different regulations, you might not even notice. You might not even care until you make a mistake and violate one of them. But it doesn't seem particularly tense in any way. It doesn't seem like people are living in fear in any sort of particular way. All right, so what we're going to do is get on the MRT, which is the subway. Pretty much goes throughout the city and does a fairly good job of that. So what I'm going to do is hop on that and go to a different district. I guess probably Little India would be a good place to go. And that's a place that's incredibly different from anything I've ever seen back home, anywhere in Europe. I imagine the closest thing is probably just going to India yourself. They have a system here where you use RFID cards and you put a stored amount on the card and you simply place it onto the turnstile. It deducts the amount. You are supposed to put it on the turnstile at the entrance, at the exit, whenever you pass through the system. Going down a big escalator. You can feel the air conditioning downstairs. It's rather hot outside, which makes sense because we are only about 100 miles or so from the equator. And what's interesting about that is that the days don't change over the year. The sun always rises at 7 in the morning, always sets 7 at night. It's always warm and humid. There's usually a shower at some point during the day. Kind of the same weather all the time. I guess if you're into predictability, this is the place for you. The trains are interesting here. You don't actually see them coming up to the track. There's a door that separates you from the track in much the same way that they do in some parts of London and other cities as well. As I'm standing here right now, I can say that I'm on one... Well, I can see about 8 cameras, but the ones that are actually facing me, one's facing me directly, okay. And they must be wondering what I'm doing too. And if I look the other way, no, it's not facing me directly. So really, I guess only, okay, maybe that one over there is looking at me directly. Maybe 2 cameras are facing straight at me. There are a bunch down here. This is, of course, the subway system, so I guess that's where they're most paranoid as far as watching over people. But I just recall when I was in London fairly recently, how the cameras were everywhere. on statues, on buildings, on buses, on streets, inside hotels, probably inside your room. And here, it seems like they got the system down years ago, and they're just working with what they built then, and just pretty much keeping the order that they established back when they first set the whole thing up. So maybe this is what London is aspiring to, but they're certainly not going about it the right way. Of course, London is a completely different type of society. There is a lot of rebellion there. There is a lot of opposition. So maybe they feel that the only way to counter that is to put up even more surveillance. Gotta express a bit of doubt as to the wisdom of that. Please do not board when doors are closing. That seems rational, reasonable. Caution for your safety, please do not put your hand on the sliding door. Usually, most of the signs that tell you what to do and what not to do also carry a dollar amount for if you do it anyway and get caught. These ones are just kind of helpful suggestions. But the more serious ones, such as the emergency intercom, penalty for misuse of that is 5,000 Singapore dollars. Penalty for bringing flammable material on board the subway, also $5,000. I believe if you're eating or drinking on the subway, that's $500. Now, I said I got gum, and I actually was chewing it on the train. I don't know if that counts as eating or drinking. It's interesting, when the train does arrive, it's more similar to the subway in Beijing or Shanghai, where people push their way onto the train, or try to push their way onto the train before the people who are on the train get a chance to leave. So in that regard, this system is actually more rude than New York City. So courtesy is something that can't always be regulated, and I guess the subway is the acid test of that. Oh, here's a train. Behind the glass, you can barely hear it. But even if the glass wasn't there, it would be extremely quiet compared to New York. And then again, so would a sonic boom. All right, I'll take this one stop. Okay, that was interesting. The guy in front of me, his card failed, but I saw the reason. It said multiple cards detected. He held his wallet up to the turnstile, and it flashed red and said multiple cards detected and would not let him through. I've never seen that error before. I had an error the other day. It was based on a misunderstanding. It actually involved me, in the end, jumping the turnstile, which to do that in Singapore, I guess, that's something to say you achieved. But I really felt I didn't have a choice, because when I got to the turnstile, I put my card on top of it, and the gate opened, and this guy who was exiting the system went through the gate, and then the gate closed after him. So I figured he had just taken my pass, and now I was stuck on the outside, and the system thought I was inside. So I did what any New Yorker would do, and I simply hopped over the turnstile, not even giving it a second thought. I don't know what could have happened to me if anybody had seen me or cared. A lot of people did see, but nobody seemed to really care. It's just one of those stupid Westerners doing what they do. And then when I tried to get out of the system later, it wouldn't let me out, because apparently I was mistaken, and I had not actually been granted access, and that guy had left on his card. But what had happened was I had put the card on top of the turnstile, and it opened. What I should have done was look at the display to see if it was in fact accepted, but for some reason it was not. And so what happened was, when I tried to exit, it said card failed, and I had to borrow a card from a friend of mine, which I'm not sure if that was the right thing to do either, but it got me through. And again, nobody seemed to really care. So It was kind of cool that I flattered the system. Probably just wound up cheating myself, but to say you hopped the turnstile and then later chewed gum, well, it's the little things you have to cling to. Okay, here we are. We're in Little India. They have unusual names for some of the roads. This one is called Racecourse Road, and it's actually one of the main streets in Little India. So I'm going to walk in a direction that I've already been down, so I know that this road actually goes someplace. Little India is one of the most incredible places I've ever seen. Imagine Chinatown. We've all been to Chinatown in one place or another, except it's all Indian restaurants, Indian shops, and the whole atmosphere is just very, very different. I mean, we have, in New York City, we have Indian sections where basically tourists go to get Indian food. This is nothing like that. This is where Indian people go to live their lives. And you simply see crowded streets. You see all sorts of things being sold. You see people sleeping in the street because there are workers, say, from Bangladesh, and they're tired and they have no place to go. For some reason, you see open sewage going down the street as well, on the side, like in a little gully. And that's not something I expected to see in Singapore, but apparently in Little India, such things happen. You have to be aware of all the different kinds of rules as far as crossing the streets. I don't mean rules and regulations so much as just rules of survival. If there's a crosswalk, then you've got right-of-way. If there's no crosswalk, the cars have right-of-way. And you better not try and crossing if a car is coming, because they will not stop until it's too late. And of course, as we mentioned before, it's not a good idea to cross against the light. As far as police presence, I really haven't seen very much. Of course, there are a couple of police stations that I've walked by, but as far as cops, I've seen twice now. I've seen policemen walking by, and both times I was struck by how young they seemed, and also the fact that they were carrying guns just in their pockets, much like they do in New York, but they just seemed incredibly young. Didn't see any arrests or any trouble or anything like that. They were just kind of walking slowly through the subway, four at a time. I've been traveling with a friend of mine, and as it turns out, as luck would have it, he has some relatives that live in Singapore. They originally came from New York, and they moved to Singapore, bringing up two children here. And it's really incredible how different children are when you raise them in a city like this, as opposed to just about any city anywhere. There's a lot more of an international feel. One of the aspirations that the parents mentioned to us was that they want their kids to be good global citizens. And I think if you said something like that in the United States, right away, people would react in a negative manner to that. You have to ask yourself why. Why is being a global citizen such a bad thing? But here, it's kind of a necessity. You have to get along with people from all different walks of life, because you're going to encounter them every single day. And another extension of that is to learn some of the languages. These kids, aged 8 and 6, are learning French, they're learning Mandarin, and of course they're pretty fluent in English already. That kind of thing you just don't see in our culture. I wish you did. So do I dare jaywalk here? I guess I do, because just about everybody else is doing it. Well, the only thing is that there really isn't a way to do it yet. There's too many cars, but as soon as there's a break, I can cross over to, looks like, Babu Lane. Now we're getting more into Little India. I should also point out, most of the people around me are not tourists. They're Indian, or Pakistani, or Bangladeshi. This is where they come to live, to shop, to eat. It's the closest thing to being to India I think I've ever experienced. It's also hot as hell, but for some reason it's not bothering me as much as it would back home. You also have to sort of slow down and not move as fast, which I also have no problem doing. That's a sound you don't hear very often in this city, is the sound of car honking. In Little India, all the rules get cast aside, by the way. People jaywalk, I saw somebody spit. I didn't report him, but I did see somebody spit. I imagine there's all sorts of gum chewing going on. all around me. It just seems like a completely different country in this particular section here. And just its mere existence tells me that there's more to Singapore than we know. I'm out of Singapore now, and I'm back in Malaysia. I'm here with Mark, or you might know him as Fiber Optic, but I'm not going to go around calling you Fiber Optic in Malaysia. It's kind of silly. Yeah. You say, hey, Fiber. It wouldn't work, right?
It wouldn't work, no.
Right now, we're at a little cafe inside the train station, and Mark is trying to figure out how to pay the check.
Yeah, I think we're paying it.
Okay. It was 49-something, and you handed him a 50.
No, it was 29.
Oh, it was only 29. Okay. That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was about 15 each.
Right.
So now we're about to try something even more adventurous. You want to describe what we're going to do?
What was it
we were... You forgot what we were going to do, didn't you?
What were we going to do?
We're going to try the fruit.
Oh, you're going to try the fruit. I already did.
Well, okay. Why don't you describe what happened to you?
I ate fresh jackfruit. And I confess that I've tried jackfruit in New York, but it was... I guess the commercial kind. It was in a jar, it was in syrup, it was, you know, sweetened. And I don't remember having any strange side effects, but I had fresh jackfruit. And let me tell you, it was very interesting. Thank you. That was our change.
Change has arrived.
Yeah.
Let's hear what that change sounds like. Good change. And change. The paper money, please? Yeah, look at that.
Very solid.
Money. You know, I have to say, every country I've been to, including Singapore, including Malaysia, the money just looks so much nicer.
Yeah. I think they actually had artists involved.
And color. They use color.
They know how to use color, yeah.
All right, so you got paralyzed from the neck down from the jackfruit?
No, actually, it felt like paralyzation from the mouth up, if that's possible. Within about 5 to 10 minutes of eating an entire slice of jackfruit, I noticed a very strange tingling sensation in the back of my throat, which turned into a burning sensation, which never really became uncomfortable until it started itching. And it was in a place that you can't quite reach to scratch.
The back of your throat.
The back of your throat. And it wasn't the kind of itching that makes you cough or sneeze. It's like an itching, burning feeling. and it just kept getting worse and worse until it sort of spread into my sinuses and up into my ears. And I completely lost all sense of balance for maybe the next 15 or 20 minutes, which I didn't actually fall down, but it was very interesting walking around the train station with no balance.
Well, it's interesting because I had some jackfruit yesterday and I didn't notice this happening. I guess I just didn't have enough.
Yeah, I think you just probably had a small bite. I ate a whole entire slice.
All right, so that's what I'm going to try to do now. Yeah. We're going to walk over to the fruit stand and I'm going to actually take some of this stuff and see if it happens to me as well.
Now, well, I might add that while the extreme itchiness and loss of balance and all that went away maybe after about 20 minutes, the burning feeling would return throughout the whole remainder of the day.
Why am I doing this to myself,
then? For example, if like a breeze blew and the breeze hit me in the nose, it would bring that burning feeling back, and it was very odd.
You know, I've played with a brain machine on the radio where I was supposed to go into hypnosis land, and now I'm going to torture myself with jackfruit. Well, why is it called jackfruit?
I have no idea, honestly. Maybe it's named after a guy called Jack.
Yeah, who likes to torture people.
Yeah.
All right, let's wander over.
Maybe Jack was the first guy they played the trick on. That could be something.
What do you think of this train station?
It's nice. It's very well laid out.
It is.
You have everything you need here, besides trains.
We're in a very foreign environment. And basically, it's a crowded station, all kinds of shops in the aisles, and everybody walking around with different kinds of headdresses. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's definitely very, what would you say, international. But international for this part of the world.
Exactly, yeah. We're the foreigners are very definitely in the minority, but the people here are so friendly.
Yeah, that's very true.
I don't feel like an outsider at all, even though we stand out like sore thumbs.
I don't know if we stand out that much.
Oh, we stand out, believe me. Absolutely.
Oh, maybe so.
Okay, so we're going over, this is the jackfruit stand?
Yeah.
I have to hold the microphone, so if you handle the transaction.
Okay, I'll take care of it.
And I see a fruit called Red Dragon. What's that?
Dragon fruit. Actually, I've never seen it in person in the U.S., but we do have the juice. And there's a dark reddish one, and there's a white one. On the outside, they both look kind of the same.
What kind of dragon is in it?
Well, dead if it's sliced like that. But from the outside, it's kind of maybe the size of a football. And it's sort of like greenish with red. It's sort of like green with like red highlights on the outside. With big leafy things that kind of look like, I guess, dragon scales, which is probably where it got its name.
I see. Now, on this little stand here, we have watermelon, but sliced up and packaged. Sweet mango, kiwi fruit, and I see right there, honey jackfruits.
Yeah.
What kind of jackfruit are we going to get?
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Okay, and I'm going to have it all because I don't think you want any, right?
I've learned my lesson. I think I'll be avoiding the jackfruit today. Thank you.
And I have yet to learn my lesson, so I'm about to embark on this expedition.
Hi. Could we have some jackfruit, please?
Jackfruit?
Yeah.
Hello, miss?
Yes?
Jackfruit, please. How many you want?
Just one.
One.
Yeah.
Enough to paralyze me. That whole package? All right.
Oh, this is local fruit.
Yeah. Local fruit?
Yeah, we had it. It's good.
Very good.
You want to buy box one? You can send five.
Okay.
Oh, we'll come back for the box later.
Yeah.
They might have to put me in it. They seem very eager to sell us more jackfruit.
Yeah.
Maybe not many people do this. So how much does that cost?
$1.50.
$1.50.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is about, it's like 30 cents, right?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
In the United States, they'd be paying us.
What's really funny, though, is that here there's a coin for every denomination.
There's a coin for every denomination, meaning what?
Like for strange like combinations of cents. Like we only have like nickels, dimes, and quarters, and here you have like 50s are still common.
Mm-hmm.
It's where like in the U.S. it's rare to get a 50-cent piece. You collect them because they're so rare.
Exactly, and that's why they're not circulated because everyone's collecting them.
Yeah.
Should we sit at that table?
Yeah, why not?
All right. Oops. I've dropped a jackfruit. We've had an accident. One of the jackfruits has hit the floor, so we only have two left.
We have a jackfruit down.
Yeah.
A jackfruit is down.
Well, the top of the bag was open. I didn't realize that,
so
I was holding it upside down. But is two enough? Is two enough for the buzz?
I think two will do it.
All right. I'm not sure where to put this. I'll
is
put
that
this
yours
over
there. Somebody dropped one there.
Were there four?
Is that yours?
It might have been.
Did you go like this?
Oh, I didn't. I was trying not. Keep in mind, I'm holding
a
microphone
that
here.
That was also yours.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wow. Is two going to be enough? Maybe this is nature's way of protecting me.
Well, for me. for me, it happened with only one piece, but there were four in there. You've already wasted two. I think you're doing something on purpose.
No, believe me, I this wasn't planned.
Okay.
I was just following you around. You were talking about getting shrimp balls, and I got excited.
I think you'd wash that one off.
It hit the train station floor.
You can wash it.
It's got train station dust on it.
Come on, 5-second rule. You picked it up quickly.
That doesn't apply in a station. All right. Now, do I need this little spear, this wooden spear?
Yeah, well, you don't have to eat it all in one bite. That was never part of the deal.
Well,
just take bites.
How did it affect you? Did you swallow the whole thing, or did it just...
I ate it in bites.
All right.
By the time I was done, I had no throat.
But that was just one piece?
One piece is all that I needed.
You held it with your hand?
Yeah, I did.
All right,
yeah, it's fine.
Here we go. First bite.
Okay.
Mm-mm-mm.
What do you think?
It's pretty delicious. And
Yeah. It's kind of like eating a slightly sweetened sock, isn't it?
Well, if you're going to say something like that, yeah, of course I'm going to feel like it's gross. But no, it's not very juicy.
No, it's lightly sweet.
Lightly sweet. It's got, you know, a little bit of bounce to it.
It's kind of like soft rubber, isn't it?
It is a little like soft rubber, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm done with that first. I'm going to take the rest of this whole piece.
Yeah.
Were you feeling an effect by now?
Not yet, no.
Oh, okay.
Took a little bit, yeah.
In that case, I'll just take one more bite.
Yeah. And if you don't feel anything still, I'm going to tell you to eat another piece.
All right.
How are you feeling so far?
Good? Well, no, I mean, is your head supposed to feel like it's about to explode? Is that part
no.
of it now? Well, then...
Not yet. Not so soon.
It's just a normal feeling I have.
Yeah. Eventually it will.
All right. I've finished the first piece. Well,
I'm very impressed so far.
Chewing the first piece.
Yeah.
Well, all it means is I have no feeling whatsoever. I mean, feeling for this kind of a thing.
So you feel no ill effects so far?
What should I be feeling?
Oh, maybe a tingling feeling in the back of your throat? Nothing like that so far?
No tingling there. Is it possible there's some people who are oblivious to jackfruits?
I guess it's possible.
All right, I'm going to go for the second piece now.
Go for another piece.
And that is the last piece since I dropped two of them on the
floor.
Yeah,
you flinged one across the room, which sort of upset everyone.
I honestly didn't. The guy came out really quickly to clean it up. But, you know, I didn't know I was doing that.
They're very Johnny on the spot as far as cleanup goes here.
My guy came from all the way in the back, too, to do that.
It's one thing we should comment on. It's a very spotless train station. I mean, compared to New York...
Yeah, but it doesn't mean I'm going to eat fruit that fell on the floor.
But if you did, you would know that you'd be safe.
Yeah.
The trains themselves are very clean.
The trains are very modern. In this country, you see a lot of the modern stuff. Nice air-conditioned trains and stations.
Yeah.
Like, last night, for instance, we went out in the pouring rain from our hotel, went all the way down to the Petronas Towers, went into the mall, had a nice dinner, came back, went back to our hotel. Whole thing was hours and hours where we were just doing all sorts of things, and we never even went outside.
Yeah, never set foot outdoors.
Never got a drop of water on us.
My umbrella never got wet, and I brought an umbrella.
You shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
I've finished the second piece now.
Wow.
I gotta say.
Why don't we give you like a minute or so, see if anything happens.
The whole time in the world, I just don't think it's gonna do anything.
You wanna take your spare piece?
I'm not having that. That fell on the floor. Yeah, I swallowed it and everything.
Okay.
I'm ready for some shrimp balls now, and
I don't want you to mix the flavors yet.
Well, I
want you to have a pure experience.
This flavor is pretty much over. It's
give it a minute.
All right, I'll give it.
No
my
tingling
God, what's
at all.
That? No, I'm just kidding. Absolutely nothing here.
No tingling at all.
I'm not used to feeling tingling after eating fruit. First of all, okay, what causes tingling when you eat fruit?
I would imagine it's some kind of acid in it.
Maybe I got a bad batch.
Yeah.
Twice.
What do you think?
Everything's fine. I see totally normal. Feel fine. Gonna have to try some other kind of hallucinogenic on me because this isn't doing it.
Oh, I can't believe that you're.
I'm
totally
sorry. I believe it. Nobody wanted to like have this happen to them more than me.
Wow.
But it's just not doing it.
Well, if this doesn't work for you, we're gonna have to find someone.
How about durian fruit? What is durian fruit?
I've just heard that the only reason durian is scary is because it stinks really horribly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's pretty pungent.
Yeah. Well, papaya smells really bad when you're carving it up. If you've ever bought a fresh papaya, it tastes really good, but when you first cut it open to scoop the seeds out, it smells pretty awful.
In Singapore, they have a sign requesting that you not carry durian fruit onto the subway. It's not something that has a fine attached to it. It's just they prefer you not carry it. We're not talking about eating it, just carrying it. That's how smelly it is.
Well, just in stark contrast, if you were chewing gum, that does have a fine attached to it.
Well, let me just clarify that. In Singapore, you cannot buy gum unless you have a prescription, or unless you can convince them, like I did, to sell it to you. However, here in Kuala Lumpur, in Malaysia, there's actually a sign saying no chewing gum on the train, on the subway.
In Singapore, I could chew gum on the train because, well, you're not supposed to have gum in the first place unless you have a prescription. If you have a prescription, you can chew wherever you want. You just can't leave it places.
So the fact that you were chewing gum, people would assume by seeing you chewing the gum that you must have a prescription or else there's no other way you could possibly be having it.
Exactly, yes.
Wow.
And a dentist can give you a prescription for gum, which I think is kind of weird.
Does it have to be sugarless gum?
Well, the only kind I could find there was sugarless. That and nicotine, which I wouldn't be interested in.
No. That's odd. Well, you know, the very first time I rode the train here, I was chewing gum. And I didn't realize that I wasn't supposed to be chewing gum.
So you spit it out immediately.
No, but nobody said anything.
Mm-hmm. No, people don't say things.
Yeah.
You know, it's only if you get in trouble that it becomes an issue.
But, right.
I jaywalked in front of people. I wasn't ratted out. I even jumped a turnstile in Singapore, and nobody snitched on me.
In general, I don't see a whole lot of people really doing anything out of the ordinary that would attract attention. Certainly not the attention of the law.
It's just people are too busy getting on with their lives.
Yeah.
To worry about these little things. All right, I think we got enough here, but I have absolutely no
ill effects whatsoever.
No, I'm fine.
Stand up, see how you feel. No problem?
No problem.
Well, the only thing I could think of then is that we're ready for some shrimp balls.
All right, shrimp balls.
Okay.
The whole reason we're here in Malaysia is because of a conference here in Kuala Lumpur called Hack in the Box. And I'm speaking with the organizer, chief organizer of the conference, Dylan Andrew. It's actually Dylan Andrew K. Is the K because we can't possibly pronounce it in America?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I'm going to ask you to pronounce it since you'll get it right.
It's Kanabiran.
Yeah, I might be able to do that. Not now, but I'll practice. But I got to say, I don't know if I ever would have come to Malaysia were it not for this conference. And first of all, I want to thank you for holding it. How many times have you had the conference?
Well, the first conference was actually in 2002. So up till now, this is actually our eighth event. Because in 2005, we actually took it out of Malaysia into Bahrain, into the Middle East. And in 2007, we went to Dubai. So in total, we've done the HITB conference like eight times.
Now, what's it like? Would you consider this a hacker conference, a security conference, a little of both?
It's a little of both. You get a mixed bag. I mean, there's some guys who come in who are obviously, you know, a bit different. And you get some government guys as well. So, you know, it's a mixed bag.
What's the atmosphere like in Malaysia towards hackers?
Surprisingly, it's kind of mixed. People don't really know how to take us. They come to the conference not really knowing what to expect. Most of the content goes over their head, well over their head, because it's really technical. But they appreciate the fact that at least there is something going on, something new, something different. And they come with an open mind. But that being said, generally the perception towards hackers is relatively negative. They view us as a menace, basically. I guess it's quite the same around the world.
Have there been any particular hacker episodes in Malaysia?
Well, no real major hacks. I mean, I guess most of the hackers, you know, go around probably doing simple stuff, defacement, you know, those kind of things. But nothing really malicious or, you know, major in the sense of like a bank hack or any kind of those kind of heists. Nah, hasn't happened yet.
Would you say most people in Malaysia are connected to the internet in some way?
Yeah, if you live in the city, you would have internet connectivity. But that being said, the price of broadband has been relatively expensive up until recently. So the uptake of internet, the penetration rate is still relatively low, even though the government hopes to try and increase it. But there isn't enough competition amongst the ISPs, so the broadband penetration isn't as high as they would like it to be.
I was surprised coming here at how advanced the transportation system is. The buildings are very modern. Is this something that is fairly new in Malaysia, this level of technology and modernization? Is it something that's spreading throughout the rest of the country as well?
I wouldn't really say so. I think we've always been early adopters of technology. For instance, our passport, we've had an e-passport for 10 years. It's a 10-year-old technology to us. However, Germany and other countries in Europe are only recently starting to adopt biometric and e-passports with RFID and stuff like that. So that being said, you know, you get a mixed bag. While we don't have good broadband penetration, we do adopt some really cool technology and try and make the best use out of it.
On that subject, I read that Malaysians are required to carry a card that has RFID on it. What's that card called?
It's called the MyCard.
MyCard. And yep. It's MY because Malaysia dot yep. MY. Clever. So tell us something about this card. What kind of information is stored on it? And you are required to carry it at all times?
You have to produce it. I mean, if you get stopped by the police, you would need to produce some form of identification. I guess that's probably the same in Europe, maybe even the States as well. I mean,
not yet in the States. There's some quite a bit of opposition to something like that. But as far as what actually is in the information, is there a chip? Is it just a lot of...
Well, it's a 64K chip. Now, the interesting part of it is that, of course, it has all your personal details, like your date of birth and your name, address, and so on. But it also stores your religion.
Stores your religion?
Yeah, it does. It stores your religion, and they also want to use the MyCard for purchasing stuff. So you can actually, there's a portion of the chip that's meant for secure transactions. So where your card would actually be tied to the bank account. So you could use your ID to make purchases for petrol or whatever, and it actually gets deducted directly from your bank account. Seems like a pretty cool idea, but I mean, you know, if you lose your wallet, it means you lose direct access to your bank account as well. There's no PIN. There's probably no second factor authentication. But yeah, I mean, the MyCard is it's interesting. It's got cool technology, but could have some scary consequences depending on how you use the information.
Well, I mean, no kidding. Having a list of everybody of a particular religion at your fingertips when you're the government, I imagine that's the dream of many governments. But was there any kind of opposition by any people when this was introduced?
I mean, initially there was quite a bit of, I wouldn't say resistance, but people, weren't too happy about it. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, religion is such a personal thing, and, you know, it doesn't really matter what it says on the card, right?
Are you allowed to not indicate your religion?
I'm not sure whether you can choose not to indicate your religion. I think you'll need to choose one of, like, the major categories. That being said, however, I've heard a story of some guy who just had a kid and he put down Jedi as his baby's religion. So, and they apparently accepted it because so his baby is the first Jedi in Malaysia.
I want to meet that guy. that's great. Now, as far as address, you said address is also in there. Now, what if you change your address? How do you work that?
Well, you're supposed to go and inform them, but of course, nobody really bothers. So, that's like kind of a moot point. The whole thing that they actually want to see is just that you are a Malaysian, because you know we have kind of a problem, obviously, with immigrants and stuff like that, illegal workers who overstay. So yeah, the MyCard is actually just to prove that you are really a Malaysian citizen, and of course, the chip is just to back that up, so that the data is actually verifiable, and it's, you know, you ask who you say you are, and it's not just a simple card with a photo ID.
As you've probably heard, in America, we are having discussions about people overstaying their welcome, illegal aliens, and things like that. And I suspect something like this might be introduced as a quote-unquote solution to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, if the technology works, they would probably implement it.
And you've had this for 10 years?
The biometric passport we've had for 10 years. The MyCard, I think it's about maybe 5 years old, 4 years old. It's relatively new. But the passport, yeah, we've had biometric passports for about 10 years.
Any other interesting technological developments that we might not know about?
Wireless technology is kind of big. It's up and coming, like HSDPA, UMTS, so over the mobile networks, getting your internet connectivity that way. Because, like I mentioned, there's not much competition amongst the telcos. So the last mile is owned by a single incumbent operator. So because of that, a lot of the mobile operators are actually coming out with new solutions. So you get some pretty interesting wireless-based technologies that are running on older GSM networks, but are offering high-speed network connectivity. So you can actually get like a 1 meg line even on DSL, but you could get 3.6 megabit on a wireless, which is kind of ironic. Yeah, it's usually the opposite.
I was very surprised by how cheaply I could get a SIM card and be able to call back home. I think I'm getting something on the order of 8 American cents a minute to call home on a cell phone, which is unprecedented.
I think that's also probably in part due to the fact that a lot of the operators are backhauling the calls over VoIP, so which is the way that they're actually bringing the cost down.
Yeah, you have to dial a special prefix first.
Yeah, precisely. So it's actually a VoIP gateway. So yeah, call quality may vary, but yeah, it's cheap, works.
Yeah, I was very, very pleased with that. And I'm also really happy with the country. I went down to Singapore as well, saw some similarities and differences between the two countries. Mostly it's a great town to just sort of wander around in. Very alien for someone like me from America. Everyone's walking around in headdresses and various other religious garb. But I find the people to be incredibly friendly and open, hospitable. The food is great. It's kind of hard to walk on the streets because the sidewalks aren't very, very present in many places. But once you get used to that, once you get used to running for your lives across the street, you sort of fall into it. You fall into the whole pattern, and it's really a cool sensation. But I want to ask you, Dylan, have you been to, I know you said you were in the Middle East for this conference. Have you been to other parts of the world as well?
Yes, of course. I've been to the States. I've been to Europe. So, yeah, I've traveled a fair bit. I wouldn't say extensively, but I have visited other countries, yeah.
And what are your impressions of the States?
Well, when I went, it was pre-September 11th, so it was like way back in 1995. So things were quite a different, I guess, compared to today. It was cool. People were friendly. It was pretty fun. Yeah, I was in Boston. I went up to Chicago as well. So yeah, got to see a bit of the East Coast.
I hope we see you at the Last Hope next year.
I'd love to make it over, man. Yeah, definitely.
That'd be cool. So now you had the conference also, you said, in the Middle East and Bahrain, I believe?
Yeah, that was in 2005, and we did Dubai in 2007. So that was something new. Yeah, Dubai was something new.
Why those places?
For the simple reason that, the whole reason why we started the Hack in the Box Security Conference was to address a need for an affordable conference, but with good content. So if you take a look at the Middle East, there aren't really any security conference, period. Any kind of conferences that are so-called security conferences are actually just vendor-driven drivel. So, you know, you go there and they're telling you, like, you know, my firewall can do X, Y, Z, buy it, and it'll solve all your problems. So it's kind of rubbish. So we decided, you know, why don't we go into that market and, you know, try and start something up there? Because, I mean, there are students and there are guys up doing some cool research in that region. And they don't really have any other choice but to fly to conferences like Black Hat or CANSEC, and, you know, having to leave that region as well. So, you know, we decided, why not? We just try and see whether we could start something up there.
And what was the reaction like locally?
Well, I guess a lot of people weren't expecting to come to a conference that was as technical as a Hack in the Box conference is. So they were pleasantly surprised, I guess, because they were, you know, kind of guessing it would be another vendor drivel kind of thing, but when they actually noticed that, you know, it was a lot about exploits and, you know, some really low level technology and low level stuff, they were like, wow, this is pretty cool.
How did you get involved in this whole community in the first place?
Wow, that would really go back quite some way. I mean, I got my first computer like when I was 12, you know, mucked around with that a bit. I spent quite a number of years in Brunei, so that's like outside of Malaysia, it's like a small little country. Wasn't very much to do, so, you know, you end up sitting around and playing with whatever tools that you have, you know, hacking hardware, you know, upgrading stuff and just playing around with that. And then 1994, 1995, that's when the internet really kind of started in Malaysia, and we had a kind of like a basic infrastructure of a dial-up, and, you know, we had BBSs, but it was like two people could be on the BBS at any one time, and that was about it, you know, and it kind of like grew from there, and I guess the rest is history. I mean, you know, it's just technology, man.
What are some of the highlights of this conference?
For this year? Well, obviously your keynote and...
Okay, put the pressure on.
And Mark's as well. We always try and improve the conference from year to year, try and add something a little bit different. And I guess for the main feature for this year would be that we're moving a little bit away from security of networks and computers and bits and bytes, but actually moving on to real-world security. So things like biometric passports and the security of biometric passports, physical security of the locks that protect your house, your car, things like Bluetooth, which is like personal connectivity for your handphone, which almost everybody has. So things that would affect not only you and me who as technology people, but people like my mom or, you know, people Joe Public on the street. And, you know, we're just trying to raise awareness that, you know, the technology isn't infallible, and, you know, just keep your eyes open, take a look, yeah, don't be surprised.
Amazing. Well, Dylan, I want to thank you very much for just being here and opening up a lot of eyes, and I wish you the best of luck in Hack in the Box in the future. Any plans for other places you might visit?
For now, I think we're just going to focus on Asia and probably the Middle East and try and build that up, but I think we're quite happy with that. The rest of the world, Europe has enough security conferences, the States as well. So, you know, I mean, we're just trying to fill the gaps.
How about Africa?
Yeah, good point. But, I guess Africa and Middle East are pretty close. So hopefully, you know, we'll see some guys from there coming on over. In fact, we have a guy from Africa who's actually down in KL presenting. So, you know.
KL being Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
That's for the listeners. They always abbreviate the city, KL. In fact, Malaysians like to abbreviate lots of things, right?
Yeah, all the time. Other national pastime is shopping, yeah.
Great. Well, fascinating place, fascinating conference, and again, best of luck, and I'm sure we'll see you in New York at some point.
Definitely, man. Thanks for coming down, yeah.
Well, that's our show from Singapore and Malaysia. want to invite you to tune in next week for another edition of Off the Wall. Who knows where we'll be. For now, let's take a listen to some local radio here in Kuala Lumpur. It's Emmanuel Goldstein. See you next week.
Sekilas kabar bersama juragan kabar anda di WFM Wanita FM Ratu di Udara.
Assalamualaikum dan salam sejahtera. Kabar dari seberang. Lagi penduduk beragama Islam di Denmark ditahan dengan alasan terbabit dengan perancangan letupan bom. Perkhidmatan Perisikan Keselamatan Denmark PET melakukan penahanan tersebut di sekitar Copenhagen. Penahanan tersebut adalah usaha terbaru agensi penguatkuasa undang-undang Denmark menguatkuasakan undang-undang mengekang pengganas selepas peristiwa serangan 11 September di New York. Beberapa siri tanggapan sudah pun dibuat di kalangan penduduk Islam sebelum ini dengan alasan yang sama dan berakhir penduduk berkenaan merengkok di dalam penjara. Beralih khabar setempat. Negara tidak akan dapat mencapai kejayaan yang lebih cemerlang pada masa akan datang tanpa modal insan yang bermutu dan mempunyai kekuatan rohani dan jasmani. Demikian dinyatakan oleh Datuk Seri Abdullah Ahmad Badawi. Perdana Menteri berkata ini kerana negara akan berdepan pelbagai saingan hebat pada masa depan dari negara lain. Malah terpaksa menghadapi ekonomi dunia yang akan berubah-ubah dan berbagai kemelut dunia. Gestur negara wajar bersedia menghadapinya dengan mempunyai modal insan yang baik dan kukuh. Beliau menyatakan di Majlis Perhimpunan Bulanan Kementerian Keselamatan Dalam Negeri di Putrajaya. Akhir sekali, usaha memantapkan kerjasama serta operasi penguatkuasaan kastam di rantau ASEAN. Susulan itu, Malaysia menawarkan diri menjadi pusat latihan penguatkuasaan kastam ASEAN. Cadangan itu dinyatakan oleh Ketua Pengarah Jabatan Kastam Datuk Seri Abdul Rahman Abdul Hamid di mesyuarat pegawai-pegawai kanan ASEAN mengenai penguatkuasaan dan pematuhan di ibu negara. Jelasnya Malaysia menawarkan latihan yang dinamakan latihan tangkas mulai tahun depan selama 7 minggu. Latihan berdasarkan 4 modul utama yang digunapakai bagi melatih pegawai-pegawai penguatkuasa kastam negara ini. Sekian sekilas kabar dari Kamar WFM, Wanita FM, Ratu di Udara. Salam mesra daripada juragan kabar, Sam.
Well, she's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. She always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner.